Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. It is enough that people know there was an election. The people who cast the votes decide nothing. The people who count the votes decide everything. No, that was not Donald Trump. It was Joseph Stalin. Periodically, we all like to come back and take a look at where we stand with our own democracy, the way decisions are made, the way we predict and then select who will be our decision makers. Only now it seems a sense of tribalism has split both the decision makers and the population. This extends beyond the presidential election, beyond our recent and upcoming recall elections. The divisions between us and amongst us have not healed. And one of our most contentious issues, the most contentious we've been facing, is the talk of election security versus voter access. So just where do we all stand with this today? What is the state of elections in the Bay Area, in California, in the nation? There's much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, that's outside the Bay Area, call us toll free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798, excuse me, 8255. Bear in mind that even our attorney guest can't provide you precise legal advice without all the facts relating to a given case, any more than a doctor can diagnose based on a phone call. But we're here to help. We're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist in your decision-making. And while their guidance mightn't be the same positions of their employers or their clients, they're happy to help, and they're here to help. Again, our phone number right here, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Joining us tonight, Brent Turner is a graduate of Lincoln Law School in San Francisco and has a degree granted by the University of San Diego in International Legal Studies from Oxford, England. Brent is a community activist whose efforts have included volunteer work for the homeless, children's health and education, civil rights, and environmental issues. More germane to tonight, Mr. Turner was instrumental in the creation of the San Francisco County Voting Systems Task Force and has been a director of communications for the Open Voting Consortium. Brent has been recognized as a groundbreaking activist for sustainability and dedicates himself to local, state, and federal issues. Mr. Turner was recently featured in the award-winning reform documentary The Real Activist, where he appeared with former CIA director Jim Woolsey and Peter Coyote. Brent Turner, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, Jeff. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. And great. Everyone in the Bay Area can hear you. And welcome back to Your Legal Rights. You know, before we go further, let's circle back to that movie. We talked about it once before. But why was it called The Real Activist? Are there fake activists?
You know, in the open source world, there's what you call open washers. And those are folks that purport to be advocates for open source software, but actually have a bit of a corporatized agenda. So that's an open washer. It's very akin to a green washer, which you'll find in the activist, regular environmental community. So, yes, there are, come to find out to my shock and dismay, what I guess you would call fake activists. And that's the reason for the title there. Actually, that was given to me by former Secretary of State Deborah Bowen. She coined that for me, and I appreciate her for that.
You know, you spoke of the Secretary of State, and they play a pretty critical role in some of the things we'll be discussing tonight. Elections Code 19202 talks in terms of no voting system can be purchased in California until the Secretary of State approves that system. Does that apply through all the different counties, things that they may wish to purchase?
Well, so the certification process is really a good entry point for the entire conversation regarding election systems in the modern day, because the certification process in itself holds a lot of keys to the riddles surrounding election system security. Most people, when they think of election systems and the flaws, they think of machines breaking or flipping votes or something that is paper ballots. They think about very commonly and purported manipulation of paper ballots. But really, if you want to start, I think, as I did as a student of the subject, you really need to talk about the certification process. And yes, the Secretary of State, it controls that process. And oftentimes, for what we call certification, the systems go through what's called an independent testing lab. And to cut to the chase, to start at the end of the story, the father of the certification process, a fellow by the name of Roy Saltman, told me that the process is broken, that in the United States, this process currently of verifying that the voting systems are appropriately secure is a broken process per the initiator, the father of that process. And that's because of the proprietary software that's at the heart of these systems. So the certification process is a very important step. And unfortunately, the fellow that really guided that initiation of that process, Roy Saltman, said he never expected the vendors of these current systems to be so dark-hearted, were his words. He didn't expect them to put the national security and the process at risk by manipulating the independent testing labs and the software code of vulnerabilities. So that's sort of a good place to start with this subject matter. You have to understand the current systems are just simply never going to be made appropriate for the task at hand. And that's why we advocate for these what are called open source election systems.
Before jumping to our first caller, I did want to ask one more thing to follow up. In California, in comparison to the rest of the nation, California requires that all recording electronic, direct recording electronic voting machines used in California must have an accessible voter verified paper audit trail. That's right in the elections code, section 19270, which is why when we're voting, we see these papers going through the machine. At the end, we get to look at them and make sure what it recorded was exactly what we voted for. My understanding is that even as recently as the last presidential election, 1/3 of states were still using machines that left no paper trail. Is that still the case? What can you tell us about that?
You know, it sounds logical and likely that would be the case, that there would be those states that are even lagging behind common sense to that extent. However, that is with bells and whistles and red flags going off around this conversation, because the VVPAT, the Voter Verifiable Paper Audit Trail, is really a problem unto itself. That was sort of an add-on afterthought piece purported as solution to the crisis regarding these electronic voting machines. And in fact, having that paper trail that you're looking at under the glass is not helpful, shall I say, when it comes to lifting the security of the system, because as it has been shown with repetition, that particular audit trail may print that at that point, but that doesn't mean that the system is actually counting that way. So rather than a paper audit trail, really what you desire is a full paper ballot. So there must be differentiation made between a paper audit trail and a real legal ballot. Legal ballots are simple to recount when approached properly. The paper audit trails have proven very cumbersome. And so that was sort of that, well, I won't say sort of, that was a mistake in the history. We should have just always insisted on paper ballots, again, with the open source software. And we hope to see those paper audit trails phased out. Now, that being said, maybe it's a little better than nothing at all, but really we need to adjust our expectations here. This isn't rocket science. We could actually do this with proper design.
Would it be a fair analogy to say that a better design system, one that counts more accurately and that's more easily audited, would be roughly analogous to a supermarket paying more attention to a duplicate copy of a rolling register tape instead of putting the emphasis on the way the registers record in the first place?
The first count is really crucial. So if you think of it in terms of a cash register like you're talking about, if that's your preference as an analogy, it's really that when the money goes in, you want to make sure that the public has access to that first count that occurs counting the money of the register. You don't want that count to occur inside a black box or behind a closed locked door, and then the person come out and then you verify that count. You need that count to be a very transparent and secure count. That's where the open source software piece comes in, so that the public access assures to the highest degree possible that the initial count is a pure count utilized through software, obtained through software that isn't clandestine in nature. It's not closed off from public view. That's the problem with the current systems, is you're starting with a count that really may or may not be as secure as you need it to be. And then you're trying to get an audit and verification of that initial count. With the better system, the security around that initial count is boosted up high. And then there's also some better designed systems now than the current that are utilized, so that when we go through the verification process and the audit, it's very simple, so the public can have understanding. And that's the key. Also, you don't want it too complex, because the complexity is not really your friend when it comes to this particular task.
Let me turn it to our first caller, John from San Carlos. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, I'm a longtime listener, and I want to thank you for this program. This is a very timely and important issue. So I'd like to get your guest's opinion on two potential solutions, both of which I've read in the news. The first is, what does he think about traceable ballots? These are a combination of printed security paper and digital tracking that allow citizens to look up their ballots after being cast. And the second is Rachel Hamm, the candidate for California Secretary of State's idea that she's suggesting giving voters a PIN number where they can confirm their ballot was tabulated. She says that voters would then be able to use the PIN identification to look up how they voted. I'd like to get your guest's opinion on these two solutions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Brent, would you like to answer in whichever order you like?
Sure. I'll take them one at a time. So, you know, the traceable ballots, anything that enhances security is a good idea. You know, I'm not really familiar with that particular thing that you said regarding the paper, the stock paper, and I would defer to, you know, folks. And by the way, you know, I'm hopefully a good advocate for some of these better systems, but I am a layperson, certainly. The technologists that actually create these systems, you know, may have certainly opinion on that, about when it comes to the paper being used or any traceability there. But the idea, and this includes the PIN number, what you mentioned about a PIN number, you know, this is the holy grail, what you're mentioning. To be able to have the voter at the end of the process take a look at a spreadsheet online and locate their own ballot through having a secret PIN number, and then verify that they're not, that their ballot is actually counted the way they intended. That's perfect. So you would see a spreadsheet, perhaps of your own precinct. You wouldn't be able to see to tell whose ballot belonged to who, other than your own, because you would have your secret PIN number. This is running into a very gray area regarding privacy of the ballot. And some folks would push back on this attempt that we're talking about. But in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, this and the opinion of some folks that I stole the opinion from, that are, I think, the, some of our brightest in this space, this is exactly how to secure an election, is to have that final piece where you can locate your own ballot. The problem is, people think that perhaps bad employers or spouses might force the information out of the voter, and then the ballot would lose its privacy. And, you know, that leads to, you know, further conversation. But I'm with you if you think that's a good idea, both on the PIN and the ballot.
John, I don't know if you're still on the line, but thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
In 2019, an NPR study of the elections industry exposed a few concerns, one of which was that state and local election offices were planning to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on new machines in advance of the 2020 election. But as recently as the 2020 presidential election, a third of the states, as I mentioned before, still had no paper audit trail of any kind. A related concern is this huge buying rate wave, where states were looking to buy machines with touchscreen voting equipment. These machines are already aging, and they're being replaced with something that creates a paper backup instead of purely electronic voting and security issues. But the buying sprees also put a focus on the close ties between the vendors and the very public officials who buy their equipment. And a lot of advocacy groups and some politicians have alleged that these vendors have unduly influenced the procurement of the machines themselves in many places, something that both these companies and election officials deny. As someone who's had a major hand in this for a long time, do you care to comment on that?
Yes, I do. And thank you again for raising some of these grittier issues surrounding this space. You know, first and foremost, I want to let the audience know that, you know, it's not all dark and doom here. San Francisco County is moving toward the, and when we say open source, we mean public software that the public can see, that that enjoys a higher security environment. And this is what the Department of Defense and NASA and folks that have mission critical operations utilize. So just so the audience knows, when we talk about open source, so very simply, if you have open source software and a good paper ballot, you have a good system. Unfortunately, what Jeff, you were just talking about with these audit trails and such, the design is important that you get the right design, and it's very simple with a paper ballot and open source. And then you have a robust audit, 100%, if you can, like they did in Georgia. And, you know, you do the best you can. Currently, the what's plaguing the environment is what you're saying. It's a business as usual mentality with the vendors of these systems, selling systems that have basically a vendor lock-in occurring. So the procurement people within these counties are held hostage to the vendors who are selling high price systems, and the systems don't work for the use intended because they're not as secure as you would find, as any person would deem appropriate under the circumstance. They have to be defensible systems, and the proprietary nature of them defeats the intent of the system. So luckily now there are open source systems coming in through, first and foremost, I want to give a shout out. There's a nonprofit out of Redwood City called Voting Works, who is doing the San Francisco voting system trials for open source paper ballot systems. And they've been very important coming along to do the build out, because now we don't have to convince a government to try to create a system. Now there's a nonprofit that's willing to do the heavy lifting there. So they basically picked up where Open Voting Consortium, who did the pioneering of this work, left off and actually created the system that was always necessary, but never in place. So they're doing the Mississippi elections for counties there. And now we're trying to get California up to speed with Mississippi, which is kind of funny. But the folks doing this are from Redwood City. And, you know, so there is light in this tunnel. It's not just all doom and gloom. But what you're saying about the vendors being, you know, we don't want your station to get sued, but a little on the shade, there's a little shade going on, and everybody's wine and dining and everybody's in on it. The only problem is this space is so crucial that there can be zero tolerance for that kind of that kind of behavior, in my opinion, in this thing. So,
you know, before we move on to our next caller, I did just want to ask about one follow-up with the answer you just gave. As recently as a few years ago, a big part of the concern is that three companies dominate the market throughout the country. We have Electric Systems and Software, also known as ES&S, by far the largest, followed by Dominion Voting Systems and Hart Intercivic. All three of these companies have worked extremely closely with election officials for years, with the vendors often spending thousands of dollars to sponsor conferences and receptions attended by these officials. And these former officials often move on to the companies and represent them as lobbyists. Is this still going on?
Absolutely. Well, welcome to the USA, and this is how it goes. And yes, it's astonishing that it's allowed again in this space. There shouldn't be corruption anywhere, but in this space of election systems, you would think that wise guys would at least have some regard for something, and unfortunately they don't. So it's ridden with this. And you know, my analogy is, if you leave one little break in the chain, one little pinhole, the rats will all run through it. So that's why when it comes to this open source work, we need it to be what's called general public license open source. It has to be the real Teflon stuff, because if it's not, these business blue suede shoe boys out of Silicon, they'll try to nuance the open source and turn it back into something they can sell or exploit. So that's what we're looking at.
Let me turn it over to our next caller, Alan from Berkeley. You're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi. So I have two questions. The first question is, I'm going to assume that one of the big challenges in this type of protocol is bioidentification, whether it be fingerprint, eye scan, some other such system, or facial recognition. Which type of bioidentification is the open source folks leaning towards? And the second question is, I come from somewhat of a software background, and look at Linux, for instance. Linux is an open source software, very popular, but the tool set Red Hat sells is now dominates the way people use it. And so often with open source, you end up with one or two companies actually sort of monopolizing the tools required to use the protocol, the software. So my question is two-part. One, what are you guys doing in terms of protecting the tool set to use this open source software? And I guess, is it blockchain, differential proprietary encryption? What's the algorithms behind it? And also the second question is about what are the bio-identifying unit, the process that you are leaning towards.
Thank you. Thanks for the questions. You know, the designs that are coming forward are all interesting with all great ideas. And as I stated earlier, anything that helps the security of the system is great. Of course, I'm not qualified to really get into depth on, the bio-identification stuff or even the intense tool analysis that you were talking about. Encryption, we know. I mean, I can make a brief statement on that. Encryption, basically, we want to avoid it because it creates a almost sleight of hand moment in the process where things are dissolving and then reappearing. And I know that some people are very, pleased with themselves when they develop these encryption systems. But, again, back to the simplicity part and the beauty of simplicity within what we consider a proper voting system. I wanted to mention to you, there's a guy by the name of Dr. Juan Gilbert out of the University of Florida who is coming up with some really cool designs that you might want to take a look at. The rest of your question may be a little beyond me. When you talk about blockchain again, I know there's a lot of very smart people that think it's a very good thing and can be a positive. I also know some very smart people that protest it in this particular space because it may, in fact, defy the public's ability to stay involved with the process. And, it's not everybody easily comprehends blockchain. So these are just some different thoughts on that. Thank you.
Alan, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. And you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You know, as a follow-up to Alan's question, in the wake of the last presidential election, Donald Trump was pushing this counterfactual narrative about vote rigging. And we've heard lots of concerns about that, primarily from Republicans, making a big fuss about voter fraud and pushing for various restrictions for voter ID and limits on mail-in ballots and the like. And as we know, voting machines are vulnerable to hacking or manipulation or fraud, much less the larger computerization that tabulates all from the various sources. Why is it that such a very few people are raising concerns about the voting machines themselves?
Well, it's a very twisty issue. And I think that it's just a lot to think about. And I can't really say why more people aren't involved. But I will say that there has been a growing movement, specifically in San Francisco, that I should appropriately give thanks now to an elections commissioner there, Chris Jurdonek, who spearheaded it along with the head of the president of the Board of Supervisors, Shimon Walton, and then current Secretary of State, Dr. Shirley Weber, and then also a fellow by the name of Trent Lang from California Clean Money. All these folks were very helpful in pushing San Francisco forward. And so it has been a growing movement. But yes, at times over the past 20 years that I've been involved, and there were people before me, it's been very lonely because, you know, even talking to the folks in government that deal with election reform issues, this is just a little too techy for some folks, and they're not really clear. And then, of course, you get the big pushback on it from Microsoft and Oracle and folks that are selling software that have a heavy hammer hand in politics, and it's very stifling. So it's been like pushing a train up a rope, pushing a train uphill with a rope to get this thing moved along. And we just think now, again, with that Voting Works group coming in, there's a chance to really move forward quickly, maybe even by 2024, presidential having a good presence in the space.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. It was Joseph Stalin who once said, "It's enough that the people know there was an election. The people who cast the votes decide nothing. The people who count the votes decide everything." Is that where we stand today? Tonight's guest, Brent Turner, has been a longtime activist for open voting and open source software. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about voting machines. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. You know, Brent, it's been said that an open source approach to voting machines is essential to the integrity of our electoral process. And with that being said, when you talk about open source software, does that mean the bad guys would get a head start?
No, actually, the good guys get a head start. And they're allowed to be in the game. So that's the twist on the languaging there. Open source, it can also be considered public source, general public license. Open source is the exact term, but the idea being, if you let the good guys have a bunch of eyes on the code and the process is opened up, that's better than a cigar smoke-filled back room somewhere with just a few guys knowing what's going on.
So we talked a little bit about the state. We talked a little bit about the big picture. I'd like to focus on some local questions. Last year, we spoke of David Canepa, who was then the president of the Board of Supervisors of San Mateo County, who co-authored an op-ed in the San Mateo Daily Journal entitled "Time to Take the Profit Out of Election Systems." Has that gone anywhere? Is there any momentum towards developing an open source system in San Mateo County?
Well, San Mateo County is, you know, a different animal, and I can speak bluntly about it as a born and raised native to San Mateo. We are not exactly Bakersfield by the Bay, but we're not quite up to speed with San Francisco. And I kid about Bakersfield. I've lived there too, so I only poke fun at places where I actually have spent time. But we're not quite San Francisco, but you know, California is not quite Mississippi. So again, the whole thing is sort of backwards. San Mateo County has luckily now had a supervisor that you mentioned, David Canepa, who is running for Jackie Spears' seat. And he's smart on this. As I also mentioned, Board President Shimon Walton is smart on it out of San Francisco. So San Francisco has an appointed head of elections by the name of John Arntz. So he's been told what to do by the supervisors. In San Mateo County, Mark Church is elected. So the supervisors can't tell him exactly what to do. They've urged him, I think, especially Canepa, to move forward with the better voting systems. But for whatever reason, Mark is lagging behind. So he's made promises that he's going to do the right thing eventually. But, you know, we think this is mission critical and all hands on deck and everybody should be racing to take the current systems and get rid of them and put the better systems forward. So yeah, we have a problem in San Mateo County.
And before I move on to San Francisco, one of the other candidates for that same seat, that's Assemblymember Kevin Mullen, was one of the proponents of the system that now allows just about everybody to participate in mail-in ballots and actually sends mail-in ballots to all registered voters. I mentioned that, and San Mateo County was one of four counties in the pilot project. Of course, that was moved forward very rapidly because of the pandemic. Do you see that as part of the answer moving forward?
I think that, and first of all, let me just mention Kevin Mullen also is a big proponent of open source paper ballot election systems. So he joins many others but he's done actual great advocacy for us as well as David Canepa has. So I want to just mention that. But the voting centers that you're mentioning, you know, that's fine, whether it's precinct, which I actually prefer, or voting centers, or both, which is really the best. The more places to vote, the better. The easier it is to vote, the better. Our only objection to a lot of this work has been that it has taken priority over what we consider to be the priority, and I mean the public advocates for the election security piece is we've never been prioritized. But, you know, whether you use voting centers or all mail-in, there's obvious concerns from, at least one side of the aisle about paper ballot manipulation. And so, you know, the answer to that is we do have to tighten up the system all around. It's not just you change the software and now everything's perfect. We need heavy reform throughout. And that's okay. The little Hoover Commission called this work making a good system better. We don't really want to trash the current system and have people lose further confidence because we want people to be voting. But what we want to do is just, make the transition over to the better systems as soon as possible. Unfortunately, San Mateo County has not been a leader thus far, and I would expect more from them, and hopefully we get that moving forward.
When last we spoke, we brought up an article out of the Examiner from last September that asked, is San Francisco's elections director impeding voting machine progress? Seems that San Francisco has come full circle. What's the current status of open source in San Francisco?
It is that the trials are moving forward. The mayor just recently signed the ordinance put together by President Shimon Walton, and with the good help of the elections commission there that I mentioned, headed by Chris Jordanic, and some advocacy groups joining me, namely California Clean Money, we managed to get an 11-0 vote count at the supervisors. And so basically they instructed that particular elections chief to move toward these better systems and start with trials. Also, we had to have the Secretary of State on board, and that was a crucial moment. And we have nothing but, you know, accolade for Dr. Shirley Weber. She's been stellar on this issue.
Earlier, we touched on the small number of people that were really involved in the machines themselves. But there was an interesting issue a few years ago when a company out of the UK, Smartmatic, which was a little-known UK voting machine business, kind of became a boogeyman in right-wing media. It seemed that Lou Dobbs took them to task and developed a huge following. And that sometimes they were tied with Dominion voting systems, but it eventually shut down their systems nationwide. And in the wake of President Trump's false narrative about election fraud, seems they're trying to get a foothold again. Are you familiar with that particular company and where they might stand in terms of the type of process they use and how visible it would be?
Yes, I'm heightenly familiar because it's such a small amount of vendors in such an important space. So, you know, Smartmatic, ES&S that you mentioned, which is election systems and software, it used to be Diebold and Dominion, and then it used to be Sequoia, but now it's basically Dominion, Hart InterCivic, and ES&S as the big three that rule the space. Well, when you have such a small amount of vendors, it's almost antitrust stuff, in some opinions. And it really is a shame that these folks, again, have played it with such dark hearts, with the price gouging and the poor performance. Allegations against these systems are not completely baseless, which is kind of another twist, you know. But that being said, you know, the Democrats felt in 2016, like Hillary Clinton was elected president, and there was some information there saying that the Russians had been dancing around inside the voting systems. So that was not completely baseless, obviously. And there's some very smart people that think Hillary Clinton was likely the elected president in 2016. And then similarly, but yet different, in 2020, a lot of Republicans thought Trump was elected, although there was a different issue there. That was basically pointed at paper ballot manipulation and less tabulation software issues. But that being said, the main thing we can do, and what really unites both parties around this very distinct and unique issue, in that it unites both parties, we can all agree that we have to have clean elections to the best extent we can in the United States. Everybody wants to believe their votes count as they intend them to count, and that, in order to, and everybody wants to have faith in our democracy to the extent that it's not just a sham. And so with these kinds of systems that are now coming forward, it'll increase voter confidence, so that rather than have people storm the Capitol or whatever, you can show the loser that they actually lost with a high degree of credibility. The current systems don't really provide for that so much, and that's why they're best, transitioned away from.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, here with Brent Turner. You still have a few minutes to get in a call if you are interested about finding out where we stand today and getting your own question answered. And tonight's guest, Brent Turner, has been a longtime activist for open voting and open source software. If you have questions for Mr. Turner, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can call regarding any question on elections, mechanics of elections and their voting machines. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. And, Brent, are there any cities or regions that could serve as role models for leading voter protection initiatives?
Well, we've worked well with New Hampshire in the past. That was a big debut there, where I mentioned Dr. Juan Gilbert earlier. He had a system out of the University of Florida that was created with GPL open source, a paper ballot system, what we call the Deckert design, where a ballot is printed and then reviewed by the voter and then placed in the receptacle before being scan counted. And so New Hampshire's been big. Alaska right now is encountering ranked choice voting. So they are very sensitive to what kind of software is being used for the tabulation process. As with ranked choice, it's a rather complicated process to do the counting. And so, and a bit cumbersome to do audit hand recounts. So having, again, the proper best software is ideal. And so Alaska now is considering, I think, doing some work here. But really, California should be the leader. We at one point had $300 million allocated to Los Angeles County to provide leadership. But unfortunately, that effort went sideways with, again, we opened the show talking about open washers. Some people got involved that really didn't have the public interest paramount. Business as usual again, and that money was lost in Los Angeles, never completed their system. But luckily, San Francisco now is a great hope going into trials, and we'll see other vendors coming into the marketplace and other counties moving toward the less expensive, more secure open source model. So,
one of the developments that has fascinated me is a surge of interest in elections that seems to be repeating itself. First, there was a surge in the presidential election cycle, primarily because with the pandemic and paper ballots far more widely spread than before, and other initiatives to try to make it easier for people to get out and vote, there seemed to have been a surge. This election cycle, there seems to be a surge because of a series of recall elections. Recall elections, as you might agree, tend to bring out people that might not otherwise be interested, but they're going to be a part of this because they have a strong feeling about it. How do you feel about that and how some of these surges might affect the view of a transition?
Well, you know, the election officials, when you pester them to suffer the pain of migrating to a new system, you know, their response is, there's an election coming. Can't do it now. Wouldn't be convenient. Well, with these recalls and all, you know, I won't give really opinion so much on the recall, although there's obvious problems with it. I mean, I think it's fairly obvious that if we're spending all our time, recalling people that we just elected, I think that's a manipulation of the system on some level. But you know, I don't want to conflate the work of the open source advocacy groups with any of that, because we're intentionally agnostic regarding ranked choice voting, voting on Saturdays or making it a vacation day, or you know, whether people even want to hand mark their paper ballot rather than have a perfect ballot dispensed from a computer terminal. Give the people what they want, but at its heart, make sure at least you're using open source software and not some proprietary stuff that you can't see that somebody sold you, that creates a faith-based black box situation. So you need open source general public license and then a good paper ballot. And if you can even get a robust audit, you're way on the good side from where we are currently in the United States, with all the flaws, Jeff, that you mentioned earlier, where some places don't even have ballots, or, you know, even if they do, they're using proprietary software. We can really do this too, which is the shame of it and the dirty little secret. It's not that the technology and the smarts aren't available. It's just political will with intellectual property interests dominating the political process.
I hate to sound Pollyannish, but do you see that if elections were more visible and more honest in the way that they were publicized, the way that people saw the process, it would be a step towards perhaps healing the divides? Because at least if people saw how the decision was made, how the baloney is made, they might not be as divided about whether to trust the system.
I think that's the essence of the effort, and that you have to just open it up, and there's no room for profiteering within our elections. This is sacred space, that a lot of blood has been shed for this issue of the people and the democracy, and we've had the great fortune and honor of having folks like Rena Evers, Medgar Evers' daughter, bless this work by saying, you know, that her father is looking down on this effort. And, you know, Dr. Weber comes from a family that was enslaved. And this is the Jim Crow 2.0 that has sort of been the missing link in this conversation around election system security. But I thank you very much for, you know, keeping a spotlight on it and allowing us to share it with our local San Mateo County folks, because this effort really comes out of this area. And, we're appreciative of your time on the program.
Brent, we're reaching the end of the hour. I wanted to give you a couple minutes, if you want to take about 2 minutes for any closing, any final thoughts you may have.
Yes, Jeff, thanks again. And I just want to, you know, give shout outs again to everybody that's really been carrying the torch on this issue. And there's been a lot of people over the years. This has been going on for 20 years. And Alan Deckert is known as the father of this effort with Open Voting Consortium. And then right down to the latest folks that I named earlier, there's been a lot of people that will never be known. And then some folks that really have high profile. Richard Painter, who is White House counsel, has been a good friend on this, as well as you mentioned earlier, former CIA Director Jim Woolsey has been my great friend helping on this issue and really trying to get us into conversations. And if anybody wants to see a fun documentary on this, it's called The Real Activist, and it's on Amazon. You can check it out. It's 30 minutes long and gives a little perspective to the underbelly of the issue.
And of course, the hope is that given that voter turnout is low, you know, in this country, a lot of people don't bother because they just don't see it as making a difference. As voter protection and these machines improve, it might increase participation.
Absolutely. That's what we want to, you know, we've been pretty blunt on your show here because I think that's what the people deserve. But for the most part, we want to encourage voting and not talk about this stuff. Just get this solved and encourage people to get to the polls and get empowered and make the choices and preserve our democracy.
And on that note, I really appreciate your participation. This has been a wonderful show. I think it's things that needed to be said. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where we're focused on what's new in elections and election systems. Our guest tonight's been Brent Turner of the Open Voting Consortium and of the San Francisco County Voting Systems Task Force. Our final guest tonight, of course, has been all of you. Tonight's show was produced by yours truly. On Your Legal Rights, we are now developing some great programming. Next week, we'll discuss Medicare, Medi-Cal, and government-sponsored medical benefits. The week after, we're talking about laws regarding social media. Other shows we're working on includes the rights of your children at school, on juvenile dependency, on where to go if a loved one has developed a dependency on controlled substances. And best of all, we'll take your calls and answer your question. A big thanks to our tonight's guest, Brent Turner. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. And back home with the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.